Welcome, Driven and Ambitious. This is your host, Cassie Pajarillo. In this episode, I'm really, really thrilled to have this lovely woman to bring in a unique perspective to the table. Drawing from her own personal journey and experiences, we'll dive deeply for you and I to learn how can one fully embrace her authentic self towards the next level and how to unlock your true potential. We all know that as entrepreneurs, you and I, we know this, often lose ourselves consciously or unconsciously in the endeavors before embodying the next identity. And I would love to celebrate once again. Actually, she and I were supposed to meet each other in Indonesia prior to the pandemic, but life happens. Because she's one of those people who I've been wanting to be part of the Ambitious Tribe. Well, more of like a Driven and Ambitious podcast. And how timely as we're welcoming the new name of the podcast as well. So from Ambitious Tribe to Driven and Ambitious. And now, well, here she is. Dreams do come true, right? So I hope that you feel that energy too. And I'm confident you'll be able to mark this episode as your favorite. I can feel it. My lovely listeners, buckle up and get cozy. You're just about to listen to a very special episode with the renowned author, speaker, the entrepreneur in the personal growth and development space, a prominent figure within the Mind Valley community, the platform dedicated to transforming lives through innovative learning and personal growth, the mother of two, Christina Mandlakyani. Hi, Christina. Finally, we're here. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hi, Cassie, and thank you for this really warm welcome. I'm really glad to start my interview schedule for today with you because it gives me, you know, a nice kickstart of the morning. So thank you.
Lovely. And I was really, really excited to talk about your book. I've been reading it. Thank you for the opportunity. I better have that signed, though, and get myself a hard copy when I see you in Tallinn, perhaps. So here we are.
You know what? I'll do something totally untypical. Just because we're talking with you fairly early on today, and in US, I don't normally do that because all those podcasts, you know, they're recorded and then they're launched and then you never know. But this is a historical moment, so it is going to stay like this forever. But in a few hours, US is going to wake up and their bookshops are going to open, and today is the day when the book is going to be on the bookshelves. So I never break this law. Usually, I don't give anything so. time relative, but whenever you guys watch it, you'll know this is the moment when we're having this conversation.
This is the moment, and I feel so grateful that you have chosen to, of course, have me. And it's no coincidence. I feel all this tingle, but here we are, especially knowing that you've got your new book coming, and I know that you worked hard on it for about what, 2 years, 3 years? Yeah, so exciting. So considering everything, though, how are you and how are things going for you?
It's interesting because, yes, it's been a long work, but it's not all the same work. So writing the book is the easiest part, at least for me, because I'm a writer. So, you know, it comes easy. But the work is not just writing. So it turns out that nowadays in the 21st century, if you launch a book, especially in the American market, it has to come with a business attached to it. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So after I wrote the book, that's when everything started. So I had to record programs. I had to record a ton of videos and interviews as well. This is the nice part of the whole thing. But yeah, it's a long, long process. And sometimes you start feeling a bit exhausted because of how much you have to do. And then launches are these peculiar type of periods in our life where you prepare in good hope. And then wait for the day to come. And see the results, but you know, while you're in the process of preparation, you still don't know is it going to work or not. It's an exciting time. I'm doing fine today. Thank you.
That's very exciting. So, Christina, you know, with the world still shaking and shifting, the war still ongoing in Ukraine, and I know you are from the Soviet Union. There's a lot of people who may or may not understand the Russian culture or the society they belong to. And you've mentioned this inside your book as well. So as a child of the Soviet Union, you've mentioned that you gravely felt fooled. It's like such a strong word. And it took you 40 years before you actually took this great facade off to follow that path. Now, two things. One is feeling fooled, strong word, and also facade. What does that mean?
I'll have to give a comment first before I answer the question. Yes. So being fooled is not quite the strong word. The actual word is watched. Which is a little a little stronger. But I have to give a disclaimer. It took me years to understand that for the rest of the world, Soviet Union equals Russia. I'm not Russian. And I don't feel affinity to Russian culture, although I was brought up in Soviet Union. So I have references in my book to that. Very peculiar, weird society. But then with that said, also, you know, Russian culture is not just the politics that Russia as a state sometimes puts up. And for people to understand and to be clear that I'm absolutely horrified by the war that is going on, by the way that Russian state nowadays chose to act. But I also want us to see the things in the bigger picture, because time will move on. And, you know, as bad as World War II was, we don't completely write off the German culture due to that piece of history. So I think Russian culture is going to come back. Those parts of it which are worth keeping for generations. But that aside, the question was about facade and being brainwashed.
Yeah, brainwashed. Yeah.
Well, you know, you don't need to be brainwashed to put up a facade. I think very often we subscribed to the demands of the society. We say, oh, but the society wants me to do so and so, or that, especially in Asian culture. I've lived there, you know, in Malaysia for 16 years. My family expects me to behave in a certain way. And I really find the reverence of the family in Asia absolutely brilliant and beautiful. It's something which I learned to appreciate. But yet, you know, when we say that it's the society or the family or my friends or my husband or my children that expect something from us, we're also fooling ourselves a little bit. In reality, yes, there is a convention that says this is how things should be, but they only become restrictive to us when we subscribed to that ideology. So as long as you keep your free will, nobody will force you into anything. And I know you might say, no, but you don't know my circumstances. I want to reference one writer. He's a writer from the past. Viktor Frankl was writing about Nazi concentration camps in World War II. And he had this thought. He said, and think, that's the ultimate suffering that a human being has been exposed to, at least in the contemporary world. He said that even in those horrible, horrific circumstances, you still have your free will and choice.
That's true.
We just sometimes refuse to see it. So, you know, after he says that, who are we in this relatively safe environment to say that we don't have a free will? No, you don't always need to choose to put yourself in danger or risk your life, but you often get to choose to eject yourself out of situation which doesn't work for you, which maybe puts you in danger. And sometimes, yes, we have to choose something which is scary.
You also mentioned that you felt that you were hiding. You were in the hiding at some point in your life. Did it have to do with upbringing by your parents? Was it related to the culture or you being in a Russian country? I mean, what stage? I mean, how did you actually got out of that in hiding? And why did you say that? Why did you even describe it as you were in hiding? And knowing that after all these years, you've started Mindvalley together with Vision, and I would love to dig deep more of that. But of course, we're all about the book now. But prior to that, prior to all these things.
Go with Nissan. You know, so, in any direction, don't worry.
Right. So it was, you know, you mentioned about in the hiding. So I wanted to understand, why were you in the hiding? Where was the hiding coming from? Or
I don't think I used that word quite so emphatically, though, because I think maybe in context I could have mentioned hiding, because I think I've always been a bit rebellious. The place where I chose to not to be in the limelight was probably Mindvalley, and there was a whole lot of combination of things why it was like this. Initially, it was this interesting idea that I entertained that husband and wife shouldn't do things together. And It's an interesting idea. I don't subscribe to it, honestly. I know a lot of people are quite adamant that's not good, but I think it is good. It is definitely good. But partially, I didn't engage myself in Mindvalley very actively for that belief. Later, because I was doing Mindvalley in Russian language, not in Russia specifically, but in Russian language, that limelight was good enough for me. So I wasn't visible in the US or in English market. But there came a time where I did feel that it's not my place. You know, it's not my company. I'm just in the background. Who am I? So that imposter syndrome, there was a moment of that where it was more like a conscious choice. I refuse not to be noticed anymore or being invisible. But that aspect or that angle that you're asking about, that was more probably connected to my journey as an entrepreneur in many, not so much in other spheres, because as I said, well, for the context, I was born in the later part of the Soviet Union, so yeah, it wasn't as dangerous as it was for, say, my parents were young. Mm-hmm. So there was space for rebellion.
Yes, there were.
So it wasn't too bad.
Well, as women, I think there is, actually, it's not just in Russia, it's not just in the Philippines. I guess this is all around the world, wherein women tend to be isolated or there's some sort of stereotyping. When you say that, okay, women will just stay at home, go and be a mom, if you're a mom, or go be a woman, don't do hard things, incorporate whatever, and men do this. I mean, we are living in a different world right now. And I've noticed, well, I remember when the first time that you came out from the Mind Valley, because it was always been like, well, if you say Mind Valley, it's always a vision. Right. Yeah. So when suddenly, well, it's not just for you sudden because you were in the Russian market, of course, in the global scene, suddenly there's like, okay, there's a Christina going on and there's women representation. And like, wow. So now in startups, the women can actually also thrive in the personal development space. So I guess my question here is that you said that you are flossom, you had imposter syndrome, you had these questions and doubts. But you decided to become vocal, you decided to become visible, and you had that courage. What was the tipping point when you, did you ever said or told Vision, hey, Vision, I'm coming out. Shoot. My turn. Was there any moment?
I keep saying that I'm coming out. The thing is that, you know, we may think that we live in a very different world, and we definitely live in a very different world compared to 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. But how much and how quickly does it change? I would say it's not fast enough, because mm-hmm. yes, there was a moment where I said that now I want to be visible, and that was, you know, that probably was a breaking point. In my case, it was in a way a reaction. You know, sometimes we want to do something and what we get mm-hmm. is the exact opposite. I actually was trying to become a little more engaged in Mindvalley's daily life, but at some point I felt so much resistance, in fact, because, you know, I was this new figure, not just but the new figure who dared to say things that others probably thought maybe I shouldn't. So there was a point where I slammed the door and I said, I refuse to fight. And I went on a sabbatical. And when I came back, I just felt kind of tired of doing the same thing. And it's not necessarily tied all to that conflict that happened. It's also, you know, I've by that time, I had been doing the same stuff for about 15 years, marketing, publishing other authors, having my own opinion. So it was a natural consequence that I felt like I have something to say. And I chose to start speaking in English because it's a much bigger market. It's a translatable market. Unlike, you know, if you're a big thing in Russia, but unfortunately, you're just a big thing in Russia.
It's just there.
Not famous. No, I just know because I've been in both markets. If you're a big thing in US, well, whether we like it or not, but you are recognized all over the world. So that was kind of natural, my also natural journey. And then I guess at that point, I said, I refuse to dim myself down. Like I want the attention that I deserve. Now, what I'm saying is that the world is not as good as we'd like, because there is always a struggle, forever a struggle. And even if I say that in 20 years, maybe I didn't get enough attention, so please give me all the attention now, I still have to prove myself. And that's the world where we live in. Even if women take up space, they very often have to put more effort staying in that space or holding that space. We kind of get to the point where we allow more women, let's say in boardrooms or in startups, we notice women a bit more. I don't think there are more male startup founders than female startup founders, but we definitely don't hear so much about female startup founders. Yes. The question is not, legally speaking, we're allowed to do anything we like. And there are a lot of women who make it there, but still we have to play on the terms which are not fair to us. Because let's say if you're a leader, what society considers good leadership qualities, usually those good leadership qualities society thinks are really bad female qualities. So women are the ones who face the dilemma. Do I choose to be a good leader or a respected woman? Very often these two roles are at odds and we have to sacrifice a piece of ourselves, whereas men don't have that conflict because a man can be brutally man and be considered a good leader. And I know I'm slightly simplifying the situation, but the point is that we women have to, we still, even if we are allowed into places, we still have to play the game on terms which are not fair to us. Yes. We still have to prove ourselves over and over again. Women get interrupted 5 times more than men. Women get explained, talked over, you know. So the world, as superficially as it seems like it's becoming fairer and fairer, the psyche of our society is still not there. We still have to fight. And I don't like fight because fight is resistance.
Yes. You know, I totally feel you when you said about it. There's a different ball game. We're playing the different field as women. And there were still, you know, there is still stereotyping or there is still instances wherein they would say, women, you have to stay feminine. And once that you step into the masculine, then this is where the trouble comes in. And there you go. The resistance also comes in. But this is also where we get to be identified as something else. I've noticed, though, that those CEOs, with those women CEOs who step up the game, they would have to wear suits so that they get to have that power or that impression of power. But when men wears just plain t-shirt, he's pretty cool, right? Like there's no fun to that. It's not fair. It's not fair.
And then if we look at the social roles, if a woman is a CEO and she's busy at work, what do we usually say if she happens to have a family? That she's a lousy. If a man is the CEO and he has a family, he's a good character to provide.
He's an adorable. Yeah. Totally.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. We get measured by a different stake.
And it's not fair. And I really am glad that you actually wrote this book and I felt the intensity. I mean, there was some parts of the book. It was such an easy read, honestly. And I love the reflection part of every chapter, of almost all the chapters. I felt the intensity that there are some parts that you felt. I felt you angry, actually. I felt like as if like, okay, Christina, where are you going? You're trying to be nice somehow. And then suddenly, whoa, I feel this. And then I felt that intensity when in you said like, hey, stop asking me if how am I and how am I the kid and how are the kids? Why can't you just ask me, how am I? Right? So I really felt that. And I also felt like maybe in your head, maybe it's more of like, hey, I'm not just Vision's wife or Vision's ex-wife. I'm not just, you know, I am my own person. I am my own identity. So I think if you don't mind me asking on this podcast, what's the story that led you to write this book? And you really just felt, you know, I wanted to open up because I know you kind of filtered yourself because the first few pages, you were like, okay, am I going to play nice here? How am I going to start this book? I mean, that was the vibe that I got there. So what was the tipping point? What was the picture when you were like, you know what? No, I'm going to grab this pen. I'm going to write this down. It's time for me to put my voice in here. And this is it. And these are the reflections. Where was it? What happened? What was, what day was that? If you remember, I'm sure you remember.
Your question is definitely much more interesting than my answer. But because I know it opens up a door into a magical world, but in reality, much more from back.
Yeah.
But I have to say that these stories, they actually come from some of my speeches of that time, or maybe a little bit earlier. I don't repeat them from stage anymore, but I know that some of them actually triggered my early audience, and that's why they ended up in the book. I did have a huge question, how to start a book. It's always a big question. I remember I was reading other people's books, just the beginnings, just to see how they start this. So there was this dilemma, and whether we like it or not, the beginning is incredibly important. Although the real beginning is intro. And that I wrote literally 10 minutes before it was sent for print. Because It was the most tortured and painful part of the whole book because that, you know, we think that the book starts with part one, which it does, and that is a crucial point. We all understand, you know, whether you're true to yourself or not, you still need to hook a person. It's like, you know, the Arabian Nights, you had to leave those cliffhangers to save your life in her case. But the real beginning is the intro. And that was a tortured part because I wrote it at the very end of the book. You can't write an intro to something which doesn't exist. Yeah,
exactly.
But then it was also changed and rewritten. And then the last version that I saw, I was so angry with it because it was pretty much not even written by me anymore. It was written by my editor. And I said, why don't you keep an intro from an editor? And I write my own. And then before it went into print, I literally, you know, I had this 1 week to do all the final changes. I refused to write the intro because I was so angry with the situation. I was like, why do you force me to do something which is not about me? So that intro is literally the last thing I wrote in the book, literally before it went into print. So there was no room to change it anymore, which I'm super happy about because it expresses me. And that's how writing happens. Now, you ask me, how did I decide to write? Well, there are different forces that make us do certain things. On one side, I've been in personal growth for 20 years. So naturally, almost everyone I know has written a best-selling book or something like that. So a lot of the things you take for granted, like if you're born to a family where both parents have master's degrees, you don't even question you will go and probably get a master's degree. If both of your parents are in business, you don't even question that you will become an entrepreneur. It's something which you take by default. So for me, the fact that I had to write a book was not a question. Of course, someday I will write a book, but that's this, like someday I'll become an entrepreneur. Someday I'll become a mother. It will happen sometime in the future. Now, I also do enjoy writing. It's just that I never had this big form before this book. So I would always write in smaller form, which is much more palatable nowadays. And then also COVID happened and we were stuck at home and we had a lot of free time.
And then
that's probably the main reason why I finally sat down.
Right. No, but I really felt that, you know, sometimes when I was, you know, every page that I flip, I would feel that there is the nice Christina who's like taking maybe a cup of tea and writing. And there's this other side of Christina who's like, wait, don't bug me. I'm writing. I mean, I can totally feel it. And I was right. You were kind of like angry or pissed off. Like, writing. I just wanted to ask you though, like, okay, knowing that these are the, you know, like a mixture of everyday lives and all these reflections that you have, there is no such a thing as deletion or there's no such a thing as editing when it comes to once that you release the book. And I do think that it's beautiful because it's the most rawest form, or if not that raw, because it was edited. But it also takes courage to actually peel all these reflections, all these life lessons that you've had. Where did you get that courage to share these reflections, these perceptions, these opinions? And it sometimes can be strong too, because again, women, once we speak up, then problems may arise, issues. Yeah, go ahead.
I think we sometimes get a little bit confused by our own definitions of certain phenomena. So, you know, like for example, I am usually quite nervous before I go on stage for a whole lot of reason. It's not unique. A lot of people are, but I know speakers who are not. So, you know, if I would say to another speaker, and how do you find courage to speak, let's say, in front of 25,000 people? For example, Lisa Nichols, who's incredibly in her element when she does that, she wouldn't understand what I mean by courage. She would probably feel something else that moves her in that situation. But in her case, maybe it's not courage. So when it comes to me telling that story, there is no courage involved in my case. I'm just curious. I'm just, you know, I'm just expressing myself and I have a message. And yes, I do occasionally write about my own experience, but it doesn't make me vulnerable because I am not afraid to share, because I'm not sharing. And the reason why I'm sharing certain stories has to do with one simple logic in my head. A lot of theoretical points or ideas don't make sense unless you give an example to go along. And whose examples can I give? I occasionally do talk about other people. I try not to refer to them in a way that people can detect who they are. But generally, I'm the person who can provide source of those practical examples of certain ideas. So because the stories that I share illustrate an idea, I don't feel vulnerable because my goal is not to expose myself or make you feel something about me. My goal is to explain what I mean. And when I explain what I mean, I really don't feel that I'm exposing myself. I'm just using myself as an example. So I guess that's why it didn't take any courage. Where I do need courage is the whole package. Of course, coming up with a book and calling yourself a writer and, you know, saying, now I'm an author, that comes with, in my case, this is where my vulnerability is appropriate, is because I'm scared. What if somebody says I'm a crappy writer? that's what makes me uncomfortable.
Judgment. Yeah.
But that's different. You know, I'm okay with you knowing certain stories. I am not sharing absolutely everything. There are things which I wouldn't share because they don't carry the point and they're irrelevant for that particular example. But I am vulnerable as a writer. Yes, I am scared. I'm probably not going to read feedback on Amazon unless somebody in my team goes through this and says, okay, this is safe to read.
Crisis problem. No, I'm sure there will be any. But I totally understand. It comes with a territory and also responsibility of once you come out there, you write a book, you write down. Actually, not just a book, anything in general. It's exposing a piece of you, regardless if it's a story or you're pointing out, you know, an opinion. Because nowadays, everybody has their own opinion and everybody's suing whoever wants to sue anyone. I mean, it's ridiculous sometimes, right?
Well, the legal language is particularly scary, but, you know, it's an interesting balancing act because we sometimes think I won't do that because I will expose myself. You never know when you expose yourself. Mm-hmm. Just today, I got a comment on a picture I shared of my son with his consent, of course. And that opinion was completely unwelcome to me. And I was very upset. And I realized that I'm much more angry and much more willing to usually I just ignore opinion, which is unwelcome. But here I thought I will not ignore it because it's not about me.
Yes. Okay.
So, you know, and that's the bizarre thing. We sometimes are, quote, unprepared. So while we think that we do certain things and that doesn't make us vulnerable or that makes us vulnerable, we are constantly out there. Unless you live in the forest or in the cave.
Which you're still going to be vulnerable there at some point. Yeah.
But then, you know, I have sheep in the farm and then I can come to the sheep and try to talk to them and they turn their backs and run away and I can get heard by them not recognizing me as their.
And I don't care at all.
The thing is that, you know, our teacher says, Eric Admits, he says, offense is always given. But it is not always accepted or received. I am probably butchering his quote because that's the first time I'm quoting him. But the idea is that you can take offense anywhere, but that's your choice.
Yes, it's a reaction. Yes. You know, I wanted to dive into that too, because you've mentioned something about being trained to just ignore. We are trained to ignore certain feelings and then people would just say everything is going to be okay, but it's not okay. So something like that. I remember you said something
like
that.
You just covered very deep topics in one very simple question.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine.
I told
fine.
You, I read it. Yeah, and I felt you. I mean, it's rarely that I actually get to read books that I actually feel how the writer writes. So I think that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Let's leave that cliffhanger for. No, I'll answer. Not in such detail. There are a few aspects. One aspect is our emotional numbness. We judge emotions, and as a result, we prefer certain emotions over other emotions, not just in ourselves, but in our environment. I'm sure everybody has heard phrases like, you know, good vibes only. Yeah. You know, take your negativity out of here. Like somebody's being toxic. Toxic is such an interesting topic. I don't think I use this word in my book, but maybe I'll write an essay
next book.
About So we do get judged for our emotions since very early age. Don't be angry. Don't be scared. Don't be sad. And then as a result, we are not just numb emotionally, we're also dumb emotionally. And we don't know how to feel, how to process, what to do with those emotions. And there's a huge chapter in my book about that, because I think it's a necessary skill. It's not the topic in itself. It's more like a groundwork. It's an interesting book. You know, you feel like I'm talking about the issue from the start, but in reality, and it's a spoiler, half of the book is preparation, because I need to give you certain skills before you go into real stuff. And real stuff comes in the second half of the book. And I do warn you against going straight for the second half of it, because the things that I talk about in the first half are incredibly important. And if you skip them, the second half is not going to have the same effect. It's like if you go skydiving, you have to do some preparation and safety instructions before you jump up. So that's how this book is structured. And I don't think I've ever revealed that on camera before. God, your episode is absolutely historically unique. Now, the second part of the question, you also touched upon something super deep that I now forgot. It has something to do with spiritual bypassing and ranting about certain aspects of our industry. Yes, there are parts which I fully enjoyed saying things. Fully enjoyed saying things which could be construed as bitching.
It's just us women. We understand.
You know, this book doesn't have a lot of my feminist streak in it, but it does have, having been in this industry for such a long time, of course, there are things which hurt my eye and which make me feel sad. So it wouldn't be fair if I didn't touch upon them. So one of those things is our obsession with how things are supposed to be, or with perfection. Well, I'm simplifying right now when I say perfection. And that's what the book is about. It's about being so naturally, I occasionally say a sharp word about how we close eyes on what is there and to face it or deal with that.
So how can you actually erase the conditioning? You've mentioned also something about we are preconditioned or we are conditioned by certain things on how we are supposed to live life. And you've mentioned that you were able to erase certain conditioning in your past.
It's a whole process. You know, we are conditioned, whether we like it or not, whether we're aware of it or not, whether we live in a crazy society like where I was born, or you know, absolutely nice Nordic country.
Yes.
the pinnacle of human achievement. We still get conditioned. And it's just that we run different programs, but, you know, call windows, they are different and somebody likes one, the other one likes the other. We are all those different programs, but we are programmed. Even absolutely liberal free societies, there's a lot of programming which we adopt just because that's how we grow. We emulate. That's the way we learn. Sure. The problem is that very often we don't question that.
Yes, there you go.
You know, the paradigms with which I live right now, they're also programs, they're also conditioning. But I just feel that this conditioning works for me, at least in this point of my life. And that's why I'm at peace with that conditioning.
Right. And I also sincerely believe too that regardless of what our conditionings are, it also affects the way that we decide things. It also affects our opinions. It affects our well-being and everything, actually. But this is actually important because it becomes either it's a flaw or it either is a superpower. But either way, both are superpowers. But how can you actually live the flaw into a superpower?
Oh, I wish I could give a simple answer. But the thing is that, and I talk about that in my book, one of the problems that we have is that we try to simplify life and we try to come up with recipes and do like this and you'll be successful. Of course, I give an answer to that question in the book, but it's like this process where you have to go through the journey and then you get it. Because if I just say something simple, it you know, when you lose the depth, you lose the meaning in essence. And that's a problem. You know, I could say self-love is the answer, but then a lot of us will understand self-love in a very simplistic or maybe in a different way than what I'm trying to put into this word. So a lot of the topics I find a little hard to open very, like, you know, in a short format. Now, the point in my book, the most important point in my book is that a lot of the times those very things that you feel ashamed of, that you feel are your weaknesses, they are in fact just your qualities, just some facets of you, whether you like them or not, whether you're proud of them or not. And by that virtue, it's your choice whether you're going to let them be your curse or become your blessing. And that choice, of course, is not a very simple thing to do. You can look at the things about yourself that you don't like and say, how on earth can it become my blessing? But everything is a choice. Yes, there are. Also, it's important to understand there's a difference between your intrinsic qualities or let's say your experiences, your trauma that makes you versus certain behavioral patterns, which may be damaging, like, I don't know, eating chocolate when you're hungry, which is changeable, but eating chocolate when you're hungry doesn't make you you. It's just a funny, you know, funny thing that you're used to doing, or let's say bad habits, smoking, drinking. Of course, these things can be changed, but there's a difference between a habit or a pattern of behavior, which you can change versus your intrinsic quality. Now, when I'm talking about imperfections, I'm talking about intrinsic qualities, not behavioral patterns. And those things cannot be changed usually. They can be reframed. They can be used in a different way. It's, you know, a very simple example would be like if you're born a shortish kind of person, that's just what you are. Or let's say if you are like heavy set and our society is fascinated by skinniness in youth, but that's what you are. And I know this is a very simple example but if we understand that there are things about us which just is what you are you going to let it be your curse? Or can you actually turn it to become your blessing?
That is also interesting because now that you are embarking or you have embarked already and journeying through this next level of bigness, because you've said that you situated yourself in just the Russian market or just in Russia. And then now, okay, let me, you know, be in the US market and globally. So there's a certain level of bigness. And I'm sure that there are a lot of women listening right now who thinks that when you are big, maybe it solves their problems, which I know you and I know that's not real. Or maybe once that they become big, things are going to be so much better. Maybe, maybe yes, maybe no. But you're in this next level of bigness and you are actually an evidence of what women or some women would love to be, especially in the coaching, consulting, transformation, real growth industry. So Christina, now that you are in this bigness era,
thank you.
How are you preparing? Yes, claiming it. But how are you preparing yourself? How did you actually shed that skin of the old Christina and got yourself in here? And what are the things that made you realize, like, oh, okay, that one is not what I expected. And I wish people knew that it is not like how you think it is.
Well, I'll slightly misplace a quote by Harvecker here. He says that about money, but it's true about everything. He says, you know, money doesn't make people better or worse. It only amplifies the qualities that they have already. So the same with anything. We think that by making it big or by our business growing or by us becoming famous, we somehow become better or worse. No. And I've seen, you know, I've lived for a long time. I've seen some of my friends really make it big. One of my friends has become an A-list celebrity entertainment, so super famous. And I've seen a lot of authors from when they started to now becoming legends. It amplifies the qualities that you already have. It's just this. And that's what we have to understand. And yes, sometimes people get lost in their masquerade, but it's not like this masquerade is new when they're big. It's been there all the time. And a lot of entrepreneurs make that mistake. They say, yeah, you can teach us about running business, but you know, you have 350 people and, you know, revenues and whatnot, and I am still by myself. No, that's a huge mistake that a lot of people do in business. They think that they can change it once it grows, but we're forgetting that the DNA is always there. It's carried through its stages. So whatever you're building, no matter how small it is, it's going, the intrinsic qualities of your business are going to carry it forward into your business when it's big. It's like children, you know, when a child is born, you can't imagine what it will be when the child grows up, but the child has everything already in that child. It only expresses itself more when the child grows up. So we have to understand that we don't change. We become a little bit bigger. We take a little bit more space. But in essence, our essence, it just is amplified, magnified, you know. I believe that if we look with very strong, you know, microscopes and we look into the molecules and atoms and the subatomic particles, we'll see another universe. It's just that we have no idea what's down there in those realms. But everything is just like, it's repeating itself in a bigger scale. There's a whole universe probably in every single atom inside our body. But the bigger the universe, the more you're aware of it you are. So that's the same with you. You just, you know, you just maybe if you feel that your bigness is still coming, then probably you're just still growing. But whatever you have in you, it will still be there. It will just be a little bit more noticeable.
Right. And everything is compounding. I seriously believe that. You know, I remember one of their, was it Mind Valley Talks? I think that was Mind Valley Talks. I just literally posted like, happiness is the goal or something like that. And happiness is a choice. Like everybody is dreaming about the car to have this and that and that and that. But in truth, the only goal here is really happiness. And that really made me felt so connected. I was like, wait, you just literally said that. And there you were. You were like expounding it that no one is admitting that in general, all of these things that they're hoping for is just basically happiness. But for Christina Manlakhiani, what is happiness for you?
Well, it's a big discussion as always.
In a nutshell. Yeah.
No, the thing is that my book doesn't revolve just around one topic. It's like it's, you know,
yeah, it has pain and
It goes through various terrain and I guess that's why it's a little different. Well, with happiness, we need as a society to redefine it because we are so confused about happiness. Yet we usually do want, if not for ourselves, but for the people that we love the most, we usually want them to be happy. If you think of children and usually, you know, what do you want for a child? Most of all, we want them to be happy. So it is an important thing, but we don't understand it. We equate, the biggest problem that we have is that we equate happiness to emotion. Emotions are not stable. And naturally, if you are equating happiness to emotion, you're never going to achieve it. Another thing which we equate it to, which is also damaging, is perfection in some way or form. Oh, this is what happiness is about. And things have to be like this, and then I'm happy. And that's also a So in my understanding, and I'm doing a huge disservice to this topic because I'm going very superficially about it. In my understanding, being happy is being, well, you know what? I'll quote from Instagram.
Okay.
It's anonymous quote I found during COVID. Happy are those people who are on a detour and can still enjoy the scenery. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the deepest quote out there. It's completely anonymous. But the point is that no matter what happens in your life, where you're going, which detours you're taking, if you can take it for what it is and savor it every single moment, I'm not saying necessarily enjoy, but savor it and feel it and be present with it, then I would say that you're happy.
And I really loved it when you mentioned that, yeah, it was a talk about perfectionism. So I just wanted to bring it up here because it really struck my most. It's like, huh, that is actually good because happiness is not selfish. So you defined it, right? Okay, so we have a question from Mind Valley, Singapore. Because so when I messaged them from Singapore and the Philippines, I messaged them that, hey, I'm going to be speaking with Christina. Do you have any questions? And one of them, her name is Farah Buang. And she asked, Christina, what's your biggest challenge today? And how are you overcoming it?
I'm just thinking there are challenges coming up all the time. So again, you know, Havikar is such a wise person. I'll quote him again. He says, there are no big problems. There's little you. So there are challenges coming up every day. Things don't work as you want. Things, you know, you expect one thing, it doesn't happen. Or there are always challenges happening. I mean, if they stop happening, probably I'm not doing anything. The only way is just grow and move on. That's how I work with challenges.
Another question is, what is the thinking process of Christina? I assume it has something to do with in general, like how do you process your thoughts?
Oh my God, I can't imagine people ask this thing.
Well, I just have a community, so.
No, I didn't realize people would be curious about that. It's so funny. Well, I'm flattered. Thank you for this question. I usually do try to ask about my own role in certain things. And also, it's like my thinking process is like a little bit of this balancing act, you know, like playing tennis with yourself. You're like running this way and you're looking at the other way. So while I'm trying to remember my responsibility in everything that happens, I also try not to go too deep with that because that is also slippery slope. So my thinking process is usually like a dialogue, like a ping pong, something like that. So when things happen, I try to approach them with curiosity rather than judgment. And rather than asking what's wrong about things, just ask why is it the way it is. An example would be, you know, I was having an interview recently and there were some things that my guest was answering that I didn't quite agree. But in the interview, it's very pronounced because when I'm the host of the interview, it's all about my guests and I try to understand my guests. So I don't generally go into offensive defensive mode. So when my guest said something that I didn't quite agree with, my initial response was like, here you go again. But then I reminded that's not what you do here. So aren't you curious why this person said what they said? And that would make me ask things to rather qualify or understand. So why did you say that? Very often when I go down this path, I discover that people are not so different. And sometimes we just express ourselves differently. And on the surface, it looks like we disagree. But the deeper you go, the less disagreement there is. So it's this ping pong process where, you know, I try to look at things from different angles and try to stay curious. But of course, if the emotions are very intense, then you can't be objective generally.
Well, I hope that answers. Thank you for answering the community questions. So as we wrap this up, thank you for your time. In a nutshell, do you have any last words, message, advice, or actionable steps for the people, you know, who's listening here, for the women who are flossom themselves? Any last words that you want to share?
You know what? I'll share it in the tail wing of that last answer. I suggest to replace judgment everywhere you can with curiosity. Yeah. And that makes a huge difference. And especially in your relationship with yourself and your self-talk, if you try to replace judgment with curiosity, I think it's going to make a huge difference in your life. So that would be probably the parting message.
That's such a beautiful, beautiful parting message. Well, this ends today's episode. Thank you so much, Christina, for being with us. Time flies. And again, dreams do come true. And hopefully I'll see you in Mind Valley University or in flesh sooner than later this time. And all right, to those who are listening to this episode, please drop me on a note on Instagram or maybe on Christina's Instagram as well. It's at Christina Wang. Okay, Christina Wang. On what you picked up on today's episode, and we'd love to feature you, or if you have any questions at all, feel free to message me, or I'm sure you can feel free and message Christina as well. This is Capsi, again, your chief encourager. Have a good day, drive ambition, serve love, and of course, be blossom. Thanks again, Christina.
Thank you, Cassie, for giving me this opportunity. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Congratulations.
Yeah.